Welcome to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. I'm Eric Damon from the National Guild of Hypnotists. This podcast series offers a fun and serious look at hypnosis and offers various ideas, discuss case studies, along with NGH educational opportunities.
So we will begin. I greatly appreciate your time. We are here today with Robert and Kathy Erickson. So, Kathy, you're his daughter-in-law, right?
I'm daughter-in-law, right.
Okay.
Yeah, we've been married for 54 years, so
I'm Robert, her husband. I'm the fourth son of Melton and Elizabeth Erickson.
Right.
I'm their youngest son, but not the youngest child. I have two younger sisters, younger than I am. But I'm number six of eight children of the family.
Yeah. How many years did you get to spend with your father?
Well, he died in 1980, so that means I was...
1945.
Yeah. So
35 years.
35 years of my life that he was alive. And Kathy, we married in 1969, so you knew him for 11 years.
Yeah,
11 years.
There, I've always been just a fan of his work, and his communication skills is just amazing. Just the way he tells the stories and the way he introduces these complex situations and a solution within that story within a story within a story. I'm just amazed by that. Did you get the pleasure of having your father read you bedtime stories?
He tended to, when I was a child, make up stories as they went along. He had a number of different themes of rotating around, usually a creature, usually a frog. They were called the white tummy stories, the white tummy being a frog. And he would tell a story about how white tummy did this, did that, an adventure, some problem that white tummy was to overcome. My father told me and my siblings a great many stories, which we called the white tummy tales, which... Those, I'm certain, oftentimes had morals in them or were lessons that he was teaching us that we didn't know that he was doing it at the time. But I remember that in particular as I was growing up in my childhood.
Robert, do you remember one short white tummy story? I know there was a long time.
Yeah, I can't really... recall a particular story because, as I said, the stories were oftentimes very disjointed from one another, and they would focus on a particular event. And here's White Tummy who has to accomplish a specific task, and my father would construct a novel way that White Tummy would have to overcome the obstacle and to accomplish whatever the task was. And of course, now looking back upon that, I can see how my father was using that as an example that if I had a task or an assignment that I was to do something, that there's more than one way of doing or accomplishing whatever it was that needed to be accomplished. And so I guess you could say that that was a way he had of influencing my decision-making as to how I would then deal with the task or the assignment that I had had, and more than one way of accomplishing it. And
if I may.
Go ahead.
I believe you were telling me about how he was very non-directive in helping to coach you to decide to make up in your own mind what you wanted to do with your life. So, for instance, your eldest brother became a farmer.
Right.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
Why don't you go down the list of your seven siblings?
Okay.
So show the diversity of the directions that people went into, and let's, you know, end up with
right.
you and Kathleen.
One of the things that many people have asked me is, you know, they look at me and they find out that I'm Milton H. Erickson's son, and they look at me and say, you're a doctor, aren't you? And of course, the answer is no, I was a school teacher. To understand that the way we grew up, children, family, we were always given a very strong, supportive role that our parents took. And all of the children at least started college. The oldest child, Bert, went into the Marines, and then what he focused on for his life career was he became a farmer. Bert is 94 years old right now. He's still alive and well and lives in Arkansas. That's child number one. Okay, child number two is Lance. He went to college and university, and he became a university first professor, and then he went into administration. And so he was a dean of admissions at the University of Michigan at, I believe, Ypsilanti, Michigan. Okay, child number two. Child number three was Carol, a daughter. She started off as a housewife. Her husband was a mechanic. Later in life, and I mean much later in her life, not until she was, say, probably 40 or so, she went on to pursue a master's degree because she had earned a bachelor's degree 20 years earlier. And she got a master's degree, I don't know exactly what field, but she became a licensed psychologist in the state of California. So she was a practicing psychologist, Carol was. Let's see, Lance, the professor, he had passed away at the age of 85. Carol also passed away at the age of 85. The next child, let's see, Bert, Lance, Carol, is Betty Alice. Betty Alice, she went to college right away after high school, and she became a high school teacher later in life. And I mean, I don't know what age it was, but she went back to college and picked up a master's degree. And she also became a licensed practicing psychologist in the state of California. And she practiced for I don't know how many years. And she passed away at the age of 80. But she pursued psychology, as did Carol.
Your father's work in their psychology practice?
I'm certain that they did. With Carol, I didn't have that much communication with her. But with Betty Alice, I had much more communications with her. And yes, I know she utilized a great deal of his techniques, our father's techniques, and utilized a lot of stories that my father would tell or utilize in his counseling. Okay, the next child was Alan, my older brother. Alan is 82 years of age. He had a bachelor's and master's from a local university. Okay, then there's myself. I'm the next child. Alan is still, by the way, alive and well. I'm 78 years old, and I'm a retired school teacher. I taught English and social studies in a high school level. I taught for 36 years. My wife, Kathy, seated beside me. She was a grade school teacher. We each have our bachelor's and master's degree. Kathy taught physical education in the elementary school level. She and, like I, also taught for 36 years, so we're both retired school teachers. Now, neither of us focused on psychology as a teaching subject or field, but I mean, I'm just showing you that our parents supported us, that, you know, when I got out of high school, I went on to college, and the question has been asked me many times, did my father ever direct me towards what I was pursuing? No. My father, my parents, monitored to see, and I know they did this with my brother Alan, they sort of monitored us as to, okay, what are you doing? And Alan would go off to college and come back and say that he's majored in mathematics, and my parents would nod their head that that's a good field. Mm-hmm. And when I went off to college and came back and said that, well, I'm going to be an English teacher or a social studies teacher, and of course, that's good. And, you know, so they're very supportive and very helpful in sponsoring or co-sponsoring our education as we went through college. Okay, the next child is Roxy, who is 4 years younger than I am. She started off as a nurse, and then she went back to school and picked up several degrees, including a PhD in psychology. And Roxy became and is a practicing psychologist in Dallas, Texas. Okay, and she's still practicing as a psychologist right now. Okay, then the youngest child is Christy. Christy, the baby of the family, as we call her, she is the only one of the children who decided at a very early age of high school, or as she left high school to go to college, that she wanted to become a doctor. And so she became a doctor, an MD, doctor of medicine. She is a ER specialist, emergency room specialist. Okay, so there you have the rundown of the family. And as I said, we were always encouraged to pursue higher education. To tell you this little story about it, about pursuing education, because I've had people ask me, did your parents ever pressure you to go to college? And my answer is, and I know this sounds peculiar, but the way I grew up, the environment in which I grew up, to me, going to college after high school was normal. In other words, you go to grade school and you get out of grade school and you go to high school, right?
Yeah.
And after high school, you go to college. Isn't that right? I mean, that's the way I saw things.
Eight kids. How many bedrooms in the house? Eight kids, your father, your mother, and eight kids.
Yeah, when we lived at 32 West Cypress, that was the house that we lived in Phoenix, Arizona, from 1949 until 1970. During that time, the last two children were born when we lived in that hospital. And I would say at the most, you would have maybe seven out of the eight children living in that house at one time.
How did the kids cope with all of these people coming into the house to disappear into your father's office?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll address what he is just asking about. And his office was in the house between the bedroom and the outside wall. It was the smallest of the rooms. It would have been a bedroom, but it was converted to his office. Now, you're a patient. You arrive at the front door, you wait in the front room, and then he's going to see the next patient. The patient would have to, of course, pass through the dining room, and okay. The question has been asked me countless times, what relationship did we, the children, have with the patients? Because during those 21 years, I mean, obviously, I mean, we're going to come in contact with the patients.
Yeah.
I mean, that's house. That's our living room. And if I have to do nothing more than to leave my bedroom to go to the kitchen or whatever, I have to pass through the front room, and so forth. We were taught, I don't remember him teaching us per se, but we were taught very early, we were not to initiate a conversation with a patient. But if they ask us some questions or something like that, we should respond accordingly. Now, what this amounted to was that with the majority of the patients, they'd ring the doorbell, I'd answer the door, or one of my siblings would answer the door, and we'd say, okay, do come in. Oh, you're here to see Dr. Rakes. And okay, come right in and have a seat anywhere here. You can see there's several chairs and couches and your magazines if you wish to read. And now we children would go about doing whatever we were doing as children, and that's that. And you would go in and see my father, and then later you'd leave and pass out of the room. And so you may have seen my father over a span of 6 months, 8 months, and I never even learned your name. But I would know that you're the patient who comes on Monday at 1 o'clock, and that's all I'd know about you. And you're the patient who drives a pickup truck, and you know, that's how I would know of you. But that's all. However, every now and then there would be a, what shall I say, unique situation. And I'm going to give you a brief story of one of these unique situations. This is the situation where, and the age factor is important here. I'm 11, Roxy is 7, Christy is 6, Alan is 15. The other siblings, they're not in this picture because they're either at work or going to college or living elsewhere. The patient is seated in the front room. Roxy and I are playing a game of checkers. And the patient addresses us and says, "What are you doing?" And I answered and simply said, "We're playing checkers." And the patient said, "Do you know how to play chess?" And I answered and said, "No." And then the patient said, I assume to me, "Would you like to learn how?" And I answered it. I remember I'm 11 years old. I answered it, "Yeah, sure." I mean, why not? And okay, we continued playing checkers. My father comes out, the patient goes in, patient leaves an hour later, and that's that. Now, I would have forgotten about that, except a week or so later when the patient came back. Here he comes in and he says, "Here, I've got a chess board and I'm going to teach you how to play chess." Now, I don't know if you know how to play chess.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
You know, it's a complicated game, but I can remember him starting with the most basic things. He holds up this player and says, "Okay, that looks like a horse, also known as the knight. Right, now let's set it down here. And what are its abilities? How does it move?" And so forth. Now, he was a patient of my father's. He was a long-term patient. He was living in he was from out of state, but he was living in a boarding house not far from us. He saw my father for about a span of about 14 or 15 months, and he would see my father regularly on a weekly basis, and he would usually show up an hour or so early and to give us lessons. Let me tell you, this long, it was, remember, he's teaching a 6 and a 7-year-old how to play the game of chess, and he taught us how to play very well. And I mean, eventually it reached the point where I can remember sitting at the breakfast table and asking my mother, "Is the chess man going to be coming today? Because, you know, I'm looking forward to the next lesson." And my mother, "Well, no, he comes tomorrow. This is Tuesday. He comes on Wednesday," or whatever it was.
Oh, I'm very excited. Robert, that's very excited. Amazing. I want to get also Catherine's point of view of when she first met Melton and them hanging out in that progression as well.
Thank you for joining us for part one of Robert and Kathy Erickson interview, son and daughter-in-law of Milton Erickson. Part two is also available.
Thank you for listening to the Hypnosis NGH podcast. You're welcome to share your ideas for future podcasts by emailing us, nghpodcast@ngh.net.